The Monday Morning Joe podcast is presented by Lakeland Auto Mall, Ford and Hyundai. This is where you want to go. Start it off at lakelandautomall.com. No payments for 3 months, plus 0% APR for 72 months, and a nationwide lifetime warranty on every new vehicle purchase, and 1 year free maintenance. Unbelievable. LakelandFord.com, LakelandAutoMall.com. Check them out. They exceed customer expectations every day. And may I recommend, if you're looking for a sports car or looking to ramp it up this year, because maybe you're looking for some more style, the Mustang Roush, I personally drove that for a week. I was glad I got a ticket. That's how enjoyable it was. I'll take the couple of points. Incredible vehicle, Mustang Roush. Check it out at LakelandFord.com. And the vehicles at LakelandFord.com, if you find your lowest internet price, and they're all the lowest prices, then tell manager Sean Sullivan, you like Joe Bucks fan, you listen to this podcast, you're a stick carrier, whatever, you get an extra $500 off. LakelandAutoMall.com, LakelandFord.com, 1430 West Memorial Boulevard in Lakeland, really easy to get to off I-4. And, of course, we're presented by Discount Garage Doors, DGDoors.com. Use your 10% off Joe Bucks fan discount, but you've already got the best price in town at Discount Garage Doors. Same day free service call. They're going to give you a diagnosis. They're going to tell you what you need. You're not going to get a big high pressure sale. And that's it. There's no cost. Call them up today. They'll probably get out there this afternoon. Fix that garage door, or better yet, replace it. They have a great selection. This is a local company born here in the Tampa Bay area. They service 18 Florida counties. Great service. Again, Discount Garage Doors. The name says it all. DGDoors.com. All right, everybody. Happy Monday morning on Monday Morning Joe, the podcast. Steve Isbitt's here, one of the Joes at JoeBucksFan.com. And gosh, the podcast here has been going about 6 months. We appreciate all of you continuing to tune in right here on JoeBucksFan.com or iTunes, Podbeam, whatever Podbean. Did I say Beam? Maybe that's one too. But whatever platform you're on, I appreciate it. And subscribe. It's easy. It's free. And then you get a little alert when the podcast posts. I hope you all had a good weekend. It is weird to not have Bucks football. I can't say I was bummed out to not have a weekend off of the grind of Joe Bucks fan to what we do on a game day. It's pretty intense and goes into the night. But it was nice to have a day off. It was nice to watch football from that standpoint. And of course, we never take a day off at Joe Bucks fan. We're always producing content for you year-round, every day, no snoozing on this website. That is our commitment to you. And frankly, we're 24/7 Bucks fans and Bucks aware and Bucks media. So we're always thinking Bucks. We're always tying things to the Bucks. We're always reading. So you know what? If it's coming across our desk here, it's going on the website if it's interesting. So there's been a lot that's been interesting, and it's like that every year, frankly. In 2017, I wrote a post last week on Joe Bucks Fan that was sort of tongue-in-cheek a little bit. It explained that we exceeded our numbers, even with a down year for the Bucks. We had more traffic on the website than we had last year in 2016, so 2017 was better. However, we had much higher goals, and we didn't meet those internal goals. So that was a bit of a bummer. We only met one out of three. And that was really a function, frankly, of the Bucks stinking the last couple of months. Just, I don't blame fans in general for, you know what, when you watch your team and they lose and they get stomped on and you get disappointed, do you really want to relive that all week in the same way where if they win, you want to see what's coming next, see what the players are saying? I understand many of you listening are loyal and diehard to the Bucks and JoeBucksFan.com year round, and I appreciate that. But there's enough fans who just check out when the team loses. They just get down. And frankly, I know late in the season I was a little bit down in December. Just you know, it's just a nut. It's only so much punishment one person can take, and we as fans, we know what that is. We're Bucks fans. So, but this is the season of hope. Everybody gets revived. We start thinking about what could be next, what's coming, some positive changes. The combine is 6 weeks away. No, actually, it's later this year, 7 weeks away. And next thing you know, the free agency dinner bell rings in 9 weeks. We're going to have new Buccaneers. We're going to get rid of some dead weight right before that or right around that time. And then it all starts the excitement starts building, because this is the NFL. And even though the Bucs are 5-11, even though they stink, let's just call it what it is. When you're 5-11, you stink. Even though they stink, there are enough pieces in place where everybody's going to have that little bit of hope in their heart that this team, if they can change a few pieces and make some smart moves and maybe get a couple of better bounces, and maybe the coach, the head coach, matures a little bit, which he should in his job, just like all of us should. And I never discount that. One of the upsides of continuity, if you believe that you have a decent guy. I'm not saying Dirk Cutter's the right guy to lead us to a Super Bowl. And I'm not saying he's hot garbage. He's in between somewhere. And if you believe you have a decent guy, that guy should evolve. That guy should get better. Cutter's certainly open to being flexible, although he's got some loyalty issues that hurt him to a fault and some mind-boggling stuff has happened. But I think Cutter will get a little bit better. I do. I really do. That's just me being the optimist, because I think he's a decent coach. Is it enough to compete with Ron Rivera and Sean Payton and Dan Quinn? Probably not, but we'll see. We'll see. It's a season of hope, and I'm glad you're here with me. We're going to be rolling every single Monday, and it's much more relaxing for me to do the podcast out of season, because Sundays are crazy. I realized Monday morning podcast after a long Monday, and it's tough. It's tough, but I'm here, and thanks for being with me. Now, about that improved Buccaneers team we're hoping for, what's our benchmark, right? What are we looking at when we think of improvement? Because it's all relative. You have to improve in relation to your competitors. If I'm a better car dealer than I was last year, well, I've got Lakeland Automall, Ford, and Hyundai at the top, right? So I've got to improve in relation to how they're improving, or in relation to where they are, because they're the best. LakelandAutomall.com. So it's all relative. Now, we saw the playoffs, and Bucs fans are in an interesting spot, because we've got all the NFC South teams in the playoffs, and now two out of three have advanced. Of course, Carolina played at New Orleans, so you could only have one team advance. And I really thought Carolina was going to win that game. I think Cam Newton is an extraordinary player, the guy who will put the team literally on his back, complemented by a good defense. I thought they were going to do it yesterday before the game, and I predicted that, but it didn't happen. Not necessarily Cam Newton's fault. Kalen Clay dropped a touchdown pass. Devin Funchess, I'm not sure why he didn't come back to that ball late in the final drive. It was there for him. Plus, it was a penalty that they didn't call in the end zone. But, I certainly don't feel bad for Carolina. But you look at those teams, and you look at the other playoff teams, and I got thinking about it a little bit deeper. And you know what? Look at the NFC. Look at the running backs. Todd Gurley, first-round pick. Christian McCaffrey, first-round pick. Mark Ingram, first-round pick. Coupled with Alvin Kamara, who's been a whirlwind third-round pick rookie. Those are three teams in the playoffs that have invested well at running back on guys making an impact. You look at Atlanta with Devontae Freeman that they got in the fourth round, legitimate number one running back in this league. Look at Minnesota, Latavius Murray, a guy that I was begging for last offseason. He made too much sense. He's just a consistent running back. He didn't have a lot of tread on his tires from out in Oakland. Good guy. Versatile guy. Here he is. He walks into Minnesota. He's fine, humbled and fine, playing as the number two running back behind Dalvin Cook. You didn't hear some massive stink. A few rumblings, but no big stink from Latavius Murray that he had to play behind Dalvin Cook. So what does he do? He plays behind Dalvin Cook, and then he cranks out 8 touchdowns after Cook gets hurt for 842 yards, and he averages 4 yards a carry, 3.9. He should have been a Buccaneer last year. Look at the Eagles. LeGarrette Blount doing his thing. High yards per carry. Blount's got 766 yards. He's turned into a good teammate kind of guy, a guy willing to split carries. They trade for Jay Ajayi, who averages nearly 6 yards a carry. Blount's not freaking out. There's your AFC. Those are your NFC teams. Now, we know I'm not going to sit here and bash Doug Martin because I've done enough of that. I did enough of that last year before the season, and there's no more crow to eat. The crow is dead, and that's just the way it is. Okay, the Bucks had some sort of weird blinders on about Doug Martin, but what was most disturbing about that is really the overall picture at running back because of, not that it was Martin specifically, but the assessment that was made to not draft a running back before they drafted Jeremy McNichols, who, by the way, was a castaway pick. They cut him, useless, wasted pick in a deep running back class. But there was the evaluation of Martin and the evaluation that Peyton Barber was no Doug Martin when Peyton Barber was, in fact, better. So really across the board last offseason, the guys who evaluate the Bucs running backs screwed up on all fronts, on Martin, Barber, Jaquizz Rodgers. I love to say he got the game ball, literally got the game ball against the Giants early this season. The guy never fumbles. In NFL history, he's one of the least fumblers in NFL history, best ball security. And he got buried. And then, of course, they didn't hit the free agency market. Despite the questions about Martin, they banked on McNichols being decent. He didn't even pan out. And so here we are, but the same guys are evaluating running backs for next year. Same guys, same crew. And if the NFC situation tells us anything, you could make a case that it tells us you need a good running game. You need talented running backs. We're light in that department. I don't know how good Peyton Barber is. I think he's pretty good. I definitely think he's pretty good. I think he showed enough in 100 carries. That's a good sample size, but it's a damn shame that they didn't give him more. So we would have less questions about Peyton Barber entering this offseason, or we would just know more about him. But the Bucs need a running back. And if you think they don't need a running back, you're just not paying attention. I just laid out the running games of all the playoff teams. And none of these teams, if you really look at it, none of them really figure to take a step backwards next year. Where exactly are Atlanta, Carolina, and the Saints going? Are they going away? Are they flukish in any possible way? No. They're pretty darn complete football teams. The Rams, new head coach, a lot of confidence there. Great defensive coordinator. They're on the rise. Minnesota. Minnesota's a good football team that's overcome tremendous adversity. Imagine losing your number one running back and your number one quarterback and some other guys and being where they are. The Eagles, again, newer head coach. Difficult quarterback situation maybe next year with Wentz returning from an injury. So maybe they fall off. But it's a tough spot for the Bucs. They have to improve at running back. They have to. They have to improve at running back. They have to improve at quarterback because Jameis has to play better for this team to be good. So those are running back situation is just very glaring. And Jason Light and Dirk Cutter deserve a very skeptical eye when it comes to how they're going to handle this. And part of that skepticism, I almost feel sitting here right now, that if, as crazy as it might sound to some of you, if you believe you've got that home run pick at running back in the first round at the number 7 overall pick, or you can trade up one or trade back a couple and get them, then do it. Then do it. Are we going to rely on these guys' ability to pick a third round running back? I don't think so. Maybe you have to look at your own deficiencies and say, you know what, if this guy's a slam dunk and everybody believes it, and I talk to my brothers and sisters in the scouting community, and they all believe it, maybe acknowledge your weakness and just go for it. But that's just me sitting here January 8th. I'm not saying the Bucs should do that, but it's something to think about. And take a peek over at the AFC in case you were wondering. Just in case. LeSean McCoy, Leonard Fournette, Derrick Henry, very unique talent in his size. A second-round pick of the Titans last year combined with DeMarco Murray. The Chiefs have Kareem Hunt, third-round pick, rookie. Steelers, obviously, Le'Veon Bell. And the Patriots, you can't compare. I don't like to use the Patriots analogy for anything because they're such the standard of an organization, you can't compare them. You know, you just can't compare what they do. But, of course, you know, they've got Deion Lewis there, who I think was a fifth-rounder 2011 or 2012. I want to say 2011. So all those teams have good running games. The Bucs need one. They need to start evaluating better. I don't know how good Peyton Barber is, but you can't ignore running back this year. And that's going to be an important theme going forward, just how important that running back position is as it relates to the entire team when you think of the rest of the club's needs. Just a little bit of music there for 2 seconds to give myself a break and put these segments together. Of course, that's the end of Crowd Chant by Joe Satriani. Those of you who listen to the Free Stretch podcast here on JoeBucksFan.com, hosted by Bobby Fenton. Great podcast every Thursday, sometimes Friday, but every Thursday. Excellent stuff. He opens with that Crowd Chant music. So good time to give Bobby a plug. And of course, all the podcasts continue here on JoeBucksFan.com, except for the Scuttlebucks, which are taking a break. You've still got the Commish and Todd Wright's Fantasy Football Podcast is going to be going to every Friday, back to Fridays, I think. And Ira Kaufman, of course, and the Commish, who tops the Commish with his brand of energy. So he's back after a depressing close to the season, like the rest of us, really, pulling that energy. One thing I wanted to talk about, which I think is important, because we try to read between the lines at JoeBucksFan.com, in addition to what we're able to get in person from Bucks officials and our behind-the-scenes access, which is really very unique to other media. But anyway, nobody knows the truth. The truth is the Buccaneers, in many ways, are one big X-file, which is fine. Most NFL teams are. But don't believe everything you read. And as I mentioned, don't believe everything you read. That takes me right to the Tampa Bay Times. Now, I'm not taking a shot at the Times, but there was something very suspect in the Tampa Bay Times this weekend. Actually, it posted on, it was updated yesterday, which is always odd. Posted on the 5th, so I think that was Friday. Friday. So, Rick Stroud, the beat writer, he did a sort of a summary with bullet points on what we know, allegedly what we know about the Jameis Winston investigation, right? The crotch-grabbing accusation that Jameis did on a female Uber driver. You're all familiar with the story, most likely. Anyway, so Stroud goes into what we know, what we don't know, that sort of thing. Okay, fine little bullet point thing. Some people are going to read it. I get it. So the last note in that piece says, quote, the bullet point is, what did the Bucs know and when did they know it? And Stroud answers the following. The Bucs received a copy of the letter from the NFL informing Winston he was the subject of an investigation into a complaint of inappropriate contact. That happened only a few days before the story was published. So wait a minute. Let me translate that again. The Bucs got a letter from the NFL explaining Winston was the subject of an investigation about this Uber thing only days before the story was published. Well, wait a minute. This is what scares me on some bigger levels, because Dirk Cutter spoke publicly and candidly. He's a candid guy. Cutter spoke publicly saying that he was asked, when did you know about it? When did you learn about this? And he said he learned about it on the field when he was asked by a reporter right after the BuzzFeed story came out. It was a Friday. Friday afternoon after practice, Cutter was asked about it. He said he learned about it that day on the field. So if the Bucs learned about it, according to Stroud, a few days before, or only days before, let's just say days is two, nobody told Cutter? That's really what we're putting together here. The Bucs knew in advance, and Cutter says it was the first he learned about it. Which is it? Now, why is that a problem? Why is that troubling? Well, first, if nobody told Dirk Cutter, that's not exactly a lot of respect for the head coach who needs to know all this stuff. I don't think Cutter's lying. I really don't. I've been a bit of a student of Cutter, like I am of all the Bucs coaches, because that's what I do every day, right? I study the Bucs coaches, their nuances, everything that's said, everything that's written, everything I see visually, everything I hear. We put it all together, right? That's what we do for you, the reader, the listener at JoeBucksFan.com. I believe Cutter. I believe that was the first Cutter learned of it that day. But if the Bucks knew in advance, according to Stroud, why not tell the head coach what the hell's going on? So that's a little weird. And that brings me to communication overall, right? Because we're not going to know the truth on that. But another communication issue possibly goes back to this whole Gruden thing. What was going on there? Cutter, if we listen to him, he didn't know that he was safe until Jason Light walked in and told him Friday before the Saints game. So the layers of communication lead you to believe that, well, the Glazers didn't communicate directly with Cutter. They didn't want to talk directly with their head coach and say, this is what's going on. We want you back. Maybe set up a quick conference call. That's an odd thing somewhat to not communicate directly to your head coach. We're led to believe that Light was the intermediary there. They told Light, and Light let him know. Odd. Maybe Light was sitting on that news for a long time. Maybe he asked. I don't know. Maybe it was some sort of power type of thing. Maybe they had decided far in advance. But it's interesting. It seems like makes you feel these two things, put them together, it makes you feel like Cutter was a little bit out of the loop or is kept out of the loop on certain things. Not very powerful or not very respected. I don't know which, but it's a little bit odd, to say the least, especially since the Bucs season wasn't completely toast when the Jameis investigation went down. I don't think they were thinking about firing Cutter seriously at that point when that investigation popped up in November, because there was still plenty of season left and plenty of room for the Bucks to do some good things. So that's interesting. And when we talk about the communication, then you have to go to, and you think about all this, then you have to go to, how are the Glazers going to communicate the expectations and the desires for this year? Because without clear communication, Jason Light, you would think, as a general manager trying to keep his job, and I was able to confirm that Light did get his fifth year of his contract. That extension had already happened sometime in late summer at the latest. But he doesn't have a new deal. He doesn't have a reworked contract. They just exercised an option. So he's looking for a new job, or wants a new extension, rather. And Cutter knows he's on thin ice. So is that a good way to go into a season? How are the Glazers communicating their expectations? Because if they don't communicate clearly, then Light might make some desperation plays, right? He's trying to save his job. He's got to be more interested in the present than the future. And when you're the fourth best team in your division, and you've got a young team, and you got the fourth best quarterback and maybe the fourth best coach, and you're really more future focused, is that a good place to put your general manager? I don't know how the Glazers are communicating, because it seems like some communication might be off. And then, of course, you got a head coach who may be more willing to, I don't know. I think the communication channels really have to be more clear at One Buck Place. And maybe they are, but all the signs lead to believe that there's some gray area here. And it's a little bit disturbing when you really start to think about what makes great organizations great. I think it starts with that communication. Is it there for the Bucks? You know, I don't think the Glazers should necessarily have low standards or expectations for this coming season, but it's got to be realistic, right? I think you got to give a coach some goals and some explanations as to expectations. I don't know if it's healthy to just let him go out there and just tell him, hey, let's go. I don't know. I think you got to have some sort of goal, some sort of focus, whatever business it is, because let's face it, the Buccaneers have set themselves up where if they get off to a rough start next year, which is a trademark of the Dirk Cutter teams, even the 9-7 good team from 2 years ago, if they get off to 1-3, they get off to 2-4, 3-5, 4-6, whatever. Well, I'm stretching a little bit, but if they get off to a 2-4 start, I mean, is that the end? Is that the end here? Are they going to give up from right there? Is that the end of the line? If the Bucks go 1-3 or 1-2, are they going to start thinking they're done? It's just not a good way to go. I think you need clear communication on that. I hope the Bucks decide to do it. I will have a chance to talk to the Glazers unless something changes on the record, as I always get to do annually at the NFL owners meetings in March. And hopefully I'll get some clarification on that. I doubt it, but hopefully at least a little bit. And I don't blame the Glazers for expecting a lot out of everybody, but I hope the communication is there, because that is critical. And especially with Jason Light, because you don't want your GM out there being desperate. You just don't want him being desperate. Although I'm not sure it would matter much for Jason Light, because I don't understand a lot of the free agency moves that he's made in the past. So it's you throw your hands in the air and hope a little bit that things can straighten out. Now, speaking of change, right? We're all looking for change. I know I am. It's January 9th. I'm here in the morning, and I'm thinking, how the hell do the Bucks still have the same defensive coaching staff as of this date? How is that possible? And it's unfathomable to me to think that there won't be any changes, because I want and expect my team to put together the best coaching staff possible, right? That's the idea. They talk about the roster, how they try to improve the roster every single year at each position. That's the goal. You go into the offseason trying to improve at each position. Well, are we really supposed to believe that the Bucks have the best coaching staff in the league on both sides of the ball? Do they have the best quarterbacks coach, the best two defensive backs coaches in the league, the best pass defensive line coach? There's got to be some sort of improvements. If not change, then at least maybe some additional coaches, maybe some consultants, something. But if the Bucks don't make any changes to the coaching staff, it's going to be ugly what appears on JoeBucksFan.com, because that's just conning the fans. That's just throwing around a bunch of BS and hoping everybody swallows it. Because there's no way that this coaching staff, this defensive coaching staff that just let up the most yards in the NFL, is the best in the league. There's got to be better, right? Who have we developed at cornerback? Yeah, Lee DeKemper, my colleague at Joe Bucks Fan, wrote it up well the other day. Ryan Smith, he's a guy that the staff unilaterally determined was a safety, and they screwed up. So they put him back at cornerback in practice last season, two seasons ago in 2016. He didn't play on the field in 2016. And then this year, they moved him to cornerback. They thought he'd be the number three cornerback, a good outside cornerback, a guy who could do it. And frankly, he proved that he couldn't. He certainly couldn't do it well. Well, he got a little better, but you wouldn't call him a good number three cornerback in the NFL. So somebody keeps misevaluating this guy, and he's not necessarily developing at the rate you want him to. In addition to being that he seems to be pretty fragile, but I'm not going to knock him on that without seeing more. But have they really developed Ryan Smith properly? No. Not after not even knowing what position he was going to play. And Vernon Hargraves, the guy nosedived in his second season. I think I might have mentioned this on the podcast. I talked to somebody very much in the know who said I couldn't publish this with his name on it, but basically explained to me it is hard to fall off in the NFL as a second-year cornerback. It is difficult to get worse, and Hargraves did just that. Did we see a step up this year from Javion Elliott? Anybody? Is there a development there? Would you say that there's development there? So I don't know how the Bucks can get away with saying the defensive backs coaches are good, or really the best that they can possibly get their hands on, is a better way to look at it. The safety situation, we've got the Derek Ward, obviously, was a disaster. He didn't deliver what they expected. He wasn't horrible on the field, but he certainly wasn't anywhere close to the player that they thought they were getting. And now he's got the weed arrest and all these issues tied to that. And he just, man, it's not good. Chris Conte played pretty much how you expected Chris Conte to play. He's polarizing with fans. He's not great. He's not the worst player in the world. Whatever. Somehow Keith Tandy, think about this, Keith Tandy went from four interceptions, I believe, in the final five games of 2016 to a non-factor. They didn't play the guy. So did you not develop him? Did you misassess him? Was there a problem with him? I don't think so. It was an effort thing or anything like that, because Tandy, per Dirk Cutter's own words, is a quote-unquote glue guy, a guy who you can count on. He's also been talked about by coaches as a, somebody who's a likely future head coach in this league, works hard. He's the only guy Jameis Winston points to as matching him in the building as far as time spent, getting there early and staying late, Keith Tandy. But he took a step back this year. They didn't show confidence in him. I don't know what happened there. And our friend, rookie Justin Evans, showed his athleticism. He fit in. His tackling got a little bit better. He progressed as a rookie. We're fine with his rookie season. Good job, Bucks. Is he necessarily a great player in this league? He's got a lot to prove, and that's fine. I'm not down on Justin Evans. I wouldn't be down on any rookie who comes in and shows he can play in this league. Not all of them do. But regardless, the defensive backs coaches have to get better. There's no excuse. If they don't make changes, it's just you know something is up or it's money-related, which is just disgusting. The fans deserve better than that in this town. It's just they just do. I don't know how else to say it. All right, so here we are. We're on the Joe Bucks Fan Podcast, Monday Morning Joe. I appreciate all of you. I could sit here and talk Bucks all morning long, but what happens is I get my voice gets worn out and my brain gets a little fried. But there, let's see. So we hit on a bunch of stuff. I'm trying to think of what I got thrown at me this weekend a little bit from some people. One thing I wanted to mention. Oh, one thing I wanted to mention, which really stuck with me and something to file away. Something you won't not going to hear anywhere else, but the All-Pro teams. Did you see the All-Pro teams as they were issued and awarded by the Associated Press? Well, if you didn't see them, what is the All-Pro team? The All-Pro team is 50 writers across the country. Ira Kaufman of JoeBucksFan.com, he's one of them. 50 writers, longtime guys, esteemed guys. It's a panel that votes for all of the postseason awards, the official All-Pro team, the most valuable player, the executive of the year, rookie of the year. The top awards are the All-Pro teams. Okay, that's fine. Well, who made All-Pro at left guard? Anybody know? The All-Pro left guard selection was an undrafted guy by the name of, I'm going to pull him up here, right here. I always forget his first name. Andrew Norwell from the Carolina Panthers. That's your All-Pro left guard in the National Football League, the best left guard, according to the media panel. Now, I know a lot of you are saying, who the hell is Andrew Norwell? And I don't blame you for saying that. So I had to ask myself, how is this guy? And I knew who he was. Did I think he was some sort of superstar? No. But Norwell, how did he become an All-Pro? How did he get those votes? Andrew Norwell, undrafted from smaller market Carolina Panthers. How did he do it? Well, what disturbs me and what should probably disturb the higher reaches of the NFL is Norwell was a darling this year of the Pro Football Focus crowd. And guess what? I bet you that many of those writers, when it came to left guard, they were like, well, who are we going to vote for? Let's see what Pro Football Focus says. The guys who grade offensive linemen without any idea of their assignments, without any idea of where they're supposed to be on a certain play. You don't even know who's doing the grading. A lot of times it's people with no real grading experience. But Pro Football Focus put a very high grade on Mr. Norwell. And lo and behold, there he is getting the votes from these writers. I guarantee you 40%, at least four out of five rather, had no idea who Norwell is. So now you've got a guy who just jumped to the top of the charts in prestige. A lot of teams give bonuses. A lot of contracts are written with bonuses to get on the All-Pro team. And he probably scored himself a lot of money. And it's largely because of Pro Football Focus. And I'm not saying he's a bad player, but the reality is that's how this guy got those votes. I guarantee it. I'm going to talk to Ira Kaufman about it. I haven't asked him who he put on his ballot. But Norwell just cashed in. He's going to be a free agent. And I think it's just a dangerous trend that, you know, NFL, like I said, NFL contract bonuses are written often for, all-pro votes. And all-pro selection, and here he is. And I guarantee you it's just because of Pro Football Focus. Now, Norwell himself He did not make the Pro Bowl. So that's kind of interesting. The coaches and the players and the fans, they didn't stick him in there. It's usually one third vote each. Third fan vote, third coach vote, third player vote adds up to the Pro Bowl selection process. And it's just something to be aware of. As far as the Pro Football Focus crowd, they graded DeMar Dotson very highly. And Dirk Cutter spoke of Dotson's good play in his season-closing news conference. He only mentioned DeMar Dotson, along with Donovan Smith, as a guy who shined when I gave him the opportunity to mention somebody. Dotson scored very highly with the Pro Football Focus crowd. I think it's just interesting that essentially the Pro Football graders have made some serious, now they've made real waves in the NFL when it comes to the All-Pro team, and that's interesting. The other interesting thing about that All-Pro team is Gerald McCoy, no votes. No votes for Gerald McCoy. Not one. And you think about that, the guys who got votes at defensive tackle, Aaron Donald, Cam Hayward, Fletcher Cox, those are your All-Pro defensive tackles, first and second team. Calais Campbell got votes, even though he plays a lot outside. Geno Atkins, Kawan Short, Damon Harrison, Ndamukong Suh, and Everson Griffin got some inside votes, even though he's outside a lot. So McCoy got zero, big goose egg around the league, and he got that 2 years ago as well. But last year he got a bunch of votes and was second team All-Pro, I believe. Regardless, it just illustrates that he turns 30 in a few weeks. He's got a lot of tread on his tires, a lot of different injuries. Man, the Bucs, if they don't want to waste this guy, they either need to trade him and get something for him, or they need to hurry up and get defensive ends who are going to produce immediately, and that's free agency, and that's what they should have done last year. So they're back to square one, which takes me back to square one of the podcast, which is running back, and the Bucs are in the same boat they were in last year. Now they have to go do something about it. So a lot to pay attention to as we go forward. On JoeBucsFan.com, what are we going to have for you? What do we do in January? Well, we're out at the East-West Shrine Game practices, mostly talking to scouts, talking to whoever is going to talk on or off the record to learn. There are coaches and players out there as well. Sometimes players visit. Bucs players have visited college guys that they knew in the past who were there. The college guys can give you some good insight. And then we actually head out to the Super Bowl for a lot of the just the hobnobbing and the Radio Row stuff that's out there. A lot of good information to be had, a lot of good sources to talk to, much more valuable than anywhere else at that time. I head out to the Pro Bowl practices, a lot of great guys to talk to there. We learned a lot. Ira Kaufman and I were out there last year learning a lot, just talking to guys. I learned a lot just talking to Joe Thomas on the side. I mean, it's just so much access. It's great. So all of that stuff I hope to share with you as we go forward. And Lee DeKemper, I know, will be out at the Combine later in February. I'll be at the owners' meetings in March. So it just keeps rolling on. And we appreciate your support at JoeBucsFan.com. One last thing I'm going to leave you with, and I'll probably write about it later in the week. Keep an eye on Kwon Alexander. Kwon Alexander, he's got 3 years in, and he's played well, and he's a key part of this puzzle here for the Bucs. After three seasons, Levante David played... After three seasons, he got a contract extension early. The Bucs didn't let him go to a fourth year. He got his $10 million a year. He got his big deal after 3 years. They did him early, as they say in the league, that he got done early. Well, I've heard from executives from many teams that, you know what, you want to have some fairness within your salary structure on the team because guys get pissed off if this guy got a deal and I didn't get a deal and he got done early, I didn't, that kind of stuff. That exists. It's petty and it's stupid. And they're all supposed to be big boys and businessmen, but NFL GMs really believe that stuff, that, oh, I don't want to insult this guy by asking him for a pay cut, or, oh, I got to pay this guy because we paid this guy, or, oh, well, you know, if we only pay Will Golston this much, I'm not saying Jason Light said that, but that kind of stuff goes on. And Kwon Alexander, a fourth-round pick, he hasn't earned a lot of money in the NFL, relatively speaking. He's the heart and soul of the defense. Are the Bucs going to get him done early? And I have a feeling that might happen. If it doesn't happen, you might have a Kwon who is a passionate guy, might have that attitude a little bit. And that might be another chip on his shoulder, which he plays with anyway. I don't know. But that could be something to watch. And I think if anybody gets done early, it's not going to be Mike Evans. It's not going to be Donovan Smith or Ali Marpet on their 2015 deals. Certainly not Jameis Winston. He's got a lot more to prove. It's going to be Quan Alexander. So keep an eye on that. And it would also be a nice tone setter, I think, for the Bucs. If they did do that, I'd be all for it. And you know what? Let the defense know. Let this team know that Quan is the man. The Bucs could do a lot worse than letting everybody know Quan is entrenched in this team even more so than the head coach and everybody else around him. So that's it. Thanks for tuning in. JoeBucsFan.com, Monday Morning Joe the podcast. Any possible way you can take 40 seconds and review the podcast in your podcast app, I appreciate that. It's always fun to listen to and look at, even if you say I suck, and sometimes I do, but I think most of the time I don't. DGDoors.com, Discount Garage Doors, check them out. Lakeland Automall, Ford and Hyundai, remember, $500 off any new Ford. Just contact Sean Sullivan and tell him you like Joe Bucks Fan, this podcast, you're a stick carrier. Go Bucks. We'll see you next week.